Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Apúrate que se acaban las ofertas de Early Black Friday en Lowe's. Ahorra hasta 50% en electrodomésticos selectos y hasta 25% extra en combos de electrodomésticos selectos. Y como la Navidad ya se siente, ahorra $4 en luces LED de 100 bombillas en hilera GE. Ahora a solo $5.98. Lowe's, nosotros ayudamos, tú ahorras. Válido hasta 12/3, selección varía por tienda, solo en tiendas selectas, hasta agotar existencias. Detalles en Lowe's.com.
Kasarni joins me now. Chris, what are we listening to?
Stepping Outside by Memphis Connected, at least, songwriter Corey Brandon. New music from him with Tyler Childers on that, too.
So the Grizzlies look promising. Cedric Carrot hits that three, and they're up one with 3 minutes to go, basically. And then they collapse down the stretch. You wrote about it. What happened down the stretch?
Everything went wrong everything. Down the stretch. In terms of the last 3 minutes, I'm trying to remember the order of shots or whatever, but the fourth quarter as a whole, Jaren was scoreless in the fourth quarter. He was 0 for 6 with a turnover. Zach Edey, I think, was 0 for 3 in the fourth quarter with two turnovers. So your two frontline guys with Wimby out, you want them, if you're going to win the game, you need them to come up big. In the fourth quarter, they combined to go 0 for 9 with three turnovers. And so that's not the only thing that went wrong, but that's an awful big one. I think I mentioned yesterday on the show, it's just going to be another one of those games where you look up, you say, oh, well, that other team has the best guard on the floor. So, well. And that's what it was to some degree, too. I mean, I think Vince Williams played great, but there's only so much he's going to be able to do offensively. And that team had De'Aaron Fox, who scored 22 points in the second half. But just like the Cavs had Donovan Mitchell, and the Knicks had Jalen Brunson, and the Thunder had Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. And, if the other team is better anyway, top to bottom, especially if you're on the road, and then they have that guy, and you don't have that guy, it's a hard place to be in.
Yeah, it's funny. I was telling Jeffrey earlier, I feel better about losses when there's no job. And performances like this, then the atrocious Josh is when Ja is playing and badly. Like that makes me feel worse in the end. Here you have the excuse, and I can imagine the good Ja being added to this group and it turning out differently.
The weird thing about this start, they're 4-11, and it's kind of a mess. But like nothing has happened that has actually altered my priors about the team at the beginning of the season. In terms of what I think the roster is capable of, there's no other than like Ja, like not being good when he plays. That's about the main thing. Like Coward's better than expected. Vince Williams is back. Some guy, Ja Clando's not good. I kind of knew that already. There's kind of a lot of stuff.
You were definitely on the Jack Landale is a good train before the season began. Okay, but that's one of them's. I think like Coward's better than even you who are optimistic about Coward expected better sooner than he expected. Zach Edey came back and has had the instant impact. It's why I feel really good about. I feel actually pretty good even after these last two losses.
Yeah, it seems like he ran out of gas. In
he
100%
ran
he was
out of
scoreless.
Gas.
Jaren was scoreless in the fourth. Zach Edey was scoreless in the second half and wasn't as impactful. But in the first half, it looked like a lot like Cleveland, where you could just feel his impact on things. And that's one of the things that happened is that the Grizzlies' defense was great against Cleveland, and it was great in the first half against San Antonio. It was not great in the second half. And I think part of that is Edey running out of gas a little bit, and part of it, another story of the game, is they decided, okay, if you're going to have Cam Spencer on the floor, we're going to make you pay for having Cam Spencer on the floor. And they just they picked him apart. And as good as he was offensively in the second half, I'm looking at the numbers. The second half, he played 8 minutes in the second half, and the Grizzlies were negative 13. And the defensive number per minute with Spencer on the floor in the second half was like was as bad as it could be.
Well, yeah, you made the point. That he was whatever. He scored 15 points, but he was minus 23 because they obviously focused on him. Back to what's good and what's bad. So Cedric Howard is good. Zach Edey, I agree. I think that was just run out of gas. I still feel really good about his instant impact. Since he's returned, Vince Williams, yep. That's terrific. He's back. One of the problems, though, is when we came into this season, there were, to me, two fundamental tasks. Figure out whether John Jaren could be good, reliable, effective pillars moving right. forward together. And then secondly, are there pieces, credible, really significant pieces, maybe third and fourth best players? Can we come out of the season feeling pretty good about who there is to put either around John Jaren or moving forward? So on the second point, I think I feel pretty good about that. You got Cedric Howard and Zach Edey, and you're feeling pretty good about that. On the first point, though, I mean, Ja playing badly when he plays is a pretty bad thing that has happened. And Jaren yeah. not being able to pick up much slack is also not a particularly promising thing that has happened. No?
Yeah. Let's take Ja first. I mean, Ja is better than he's played this season. But there was a downward trend prior to just this season. I mean, people have noted this, and he bristled at the question about it. Someone asked him that his impact has sort of trickled down in terms of, you know, getting to the rim, getting into the paint, this kind of stuff. The shooting has not come along to mitigate that downward trend. That downward trend is not just the last 15 games or the 10 he's played or whatever. It's the last 4 years. And so the Ja thing is really troubling. The trajectory of reliability, you need him. This whole thing, for all the things people can get mad about the coach and the front office and all the other stuff, this whole apparatus has been premised on the idea that Ja Morant is consistently on the floor playing at an all-NBA level. And it just hasn't been true for 4 years. And that's the number one, number two, and number three thing, honestly. As far as Jaren, I think that was a terrible fourth quarter for Jaren on both ends of the floor. Like that, I mean, he really. My friend Keith Barrett called it humiliating. I can't really argue with that. It was really bad. My thing with Jaren, and it's this weird thing where, like, I was like the highest on Jaren of like anybody other than Peter Edmiston from the jump. But lately, there's been this thing where people just proclaim him the team's best player, and I guess that's partly sort of a backhand swipe at Morant. I have never pounded the table about that because it's clear to me that he is not the engine of what you're going to do. I think he's a great ideally, he's a second, third option on offense who puts a lot of effort on the defensive end, and he balances that great play on both ends of the floor, which you didn't get last night. But I don't think he's the guy who you rely on to bring you home. As high as I've been on him, I do not think that's what he is. That's what you need John Morant to be.
You mentioned Vince. I thought Vince was terrific.
Vince has been great. I mean, he was probably the best player on the team last night, you know, all things considered. But that's sort of where you're at. I mean, that's part of the problem. He should be the fourth or fifth or sixth best player on the team, you know. I think he's been great. I think, you know, he should not be starting at point guard. He's been thrust into that situation. But to me, he would be, you know, even if you're at full health, he's got to be in the rotation, got to be getting significant minutes. I would wonder about starting him, frankly, you know, when Morant's back. I think he's better. I said this during the summer, and it felt like sort of a wild thing to say at the time. And I gave it caveats by saying, like, there are big questions in terms of health and opportunity. But I think at the summer, I thought this was better. Like, if he has the health and the opportunity, I think he's better than Jalen Wells, you know? And I think that looks true every night.
Well, and then KCP can't hit a shot still. Like, it feels like Orlando was.
Well, I think we're at the point now with that where I think they were probably overly solicitous of him to begin the season.
Right.
And now you've had all the injuries. I think if they get healthy, if they ever get healthy, I think he may just not be in the rotation.
All right. So they got the Kings, the Mavs, the Nuggets, the Pelicans, the Clippers, and then the Kings again. That's a pretty soft schedule. Chance to. I offered Jeffrey 2-4. You going to take it?
Wait a minute. So
Kings, Mavs, Nuggets. That's a tough one. Then Pelicans, Clippers, and Kings.
I think you're down so bad, you got to take 2-4. But I'm not happy. I'm not happy to take 2-4.
Right.
I would like to do better than 2-4. But at this point, you're like 1-9 in your last 10, and so it's like, you know, you're not too good. You're not too good to accept 2-4. I think at this point, if Morant's going to miss all those games and Jerome and Pippen.
Yeah, that's the other thing, by the way. It's not just that they don't have a point guard. They don't have creators at all on this team. And you have and like Pippen would have come in handy last night, and it feels like he's going to be gone for a long time. All right. There we go on that. You did resume your countdown of the 25 greatest Grizzlies. We're up or down or whatever you want to call it to 21, and that is Darrell Arthur, who you call a one-hit wonder. What was that hit?
I don't think I used that phrase.
I thought that someone did. Someone did, maybe. Maybe it was somewhere on social media. It was social. I saw the word phrase one-hit.
No, I did not use that.
Okay.
That's fine. I mean, I'm not quarrel with other people, but I did not use that phrase. And would not use that phrase. As far as Arthur,
he was noticed. He did have one absolutely signature moment. We can agree with,
which is
that.
What I wrote about. It was an extended moment. He had a stretch. He had a 10-minute stretch in game. I can't remember if it was game three or game four. I haven't looked at this since I wrote it because I was busy this morning. It was the Beale Street beatdown. Yeah, game four, first round against the Spurs, 2011. They're up 2-1. Spurs backs against the wall. And the Grizzlies had a lead before this happened, but there was a 10-minute stretch where he dominated the whole game on both ends of the floor. And, like, you know, Tim Duncan's out there, and Tony Parker's out there, Zach Randolph is out there, and Marc Gasol is out there, and all this. And he's the best player on the floor for 10 minutes. So it wasn't just he had one big play. He completely took apart the Spurs offense, guarding five different players, switching on pick and rolls, possession after possession after possession. He was just hitting mid-range jumper after mid-range jumper, has a nice pass to Tony Allen for a dunk, has two dunks himself. And then the moment people remember is when he blocks Tony Parker's shot, falls out of bounds after he blocks the shot, streaks down the floor past nine other people to catch the alley-oop dunk from O.J. Mayo, which is the greatest oomph, there it is request in FedEx Forum history.
And it felt like it was like, oh, my God, they got Z-Bo. They got Mark, and now they got 23-year-old Darrell Arthur into the future.
Who played well with either of those guys. Yeah. So it's the third big who could play with either one. And then he had a torn Achilles, and he was never the same.
That was the problem. You do wonder. It feels like Achilles aren't quite what they used to be. Right. Yeah, like if it were today, it is amazing the fragility of a career. I mean, he still played for a bunch of years after that.
He came back and played, and he had some decent seasons with the Nuggets. But he was, and I have this in the store in the piece. I can't remember what it was, but I think he was finished by like age 30 or 31 or something like that.
Amazing to read that he still has one more playoff game than as a Grizzly than Jaren Jackson Jr., for example. So
that was an era, man. That was an era
That was an era.
They were very competitive most of the time. Yeah.
All right. You have had a hell of a week writing about the Grizzlies and then Todd Snyder. And now today you also had your film piece on what's happening in Memphis film up today. People can read that over at the Daily Memphian. I guess the big picture that is being released this week is the second half of the Wicked films, Wicked for Good. You did see the first one. Did you see it in a theater?
I actually didn't. I got an advanced screener. This is during award season last year. I got an advanced screener, and we were all going to watch it, me and my wife and my son, and we got down in our little TV room here in the basement where I'm sitting right now. I started watching it, and our son bailed after about 30 minutes. And then we got about halfway through, and my wife was like, I can't do this. And she got up and left. And I stuck it out, you know, because I could say that I'd seen it. We all thought it was rough. A lot of people disagree with that. But my whole family was like, nope, on the whole thing. So I think the second one might be better. You know, if you go through your 3 hours of setup, now maybe you get the payoff.
You're not a big music. I know you liked Hamilton, but you're not a big musical guy. You know, I felt that.
I am for the most part. There are exceptions. Like I like Hadestown and some other stuff I've seen, but like the classic like Broadway style like, you know, sing for the rafters kind of like big inspirational song. Right. I don't like that style of music, and I don't like that kind of stuff. Now, there are movie musicals I love. Meet Me in St. Louis is one of my very, very, very favorite movies. Mm-hmm. To me, that's very different from the Broadway style musical.
So there's also this sort of remake Broadway musical as a film, which has happened. There was recently, right, or within the last few years.
Worst of Both Worlds, kind of, yeah.
There was recently West Side Story, and I had to...
That was good, actually.
I had to kind of will myself through that, honestly. I went to see
it. Really? I thought it was good. I was impressed by that. Spielberg. Of course, that's Steven Spielberg. He knows how to make
Steven
movies.
It was Steven Spielberg. He doesn't know how to make movies. I would have preferred an original Steven Spielberg, honestly. It was my feeling. But anyway, so this one... you are more optimistic about Wicked for good. Why? Because
I think the story aspect of it, I'm going to assume it's going to be more interesting. I just think so much of the first part was set up, and now you pay off the setup. But my expectations are still very low. I mean, I will watch it out of pure duty. Like that's the only reason I'm going to watch it.
All right, and then lastly, Pulp Fiction is going to be on the big screen November 20th at Studio on the Square as part of their ongoing Throwback Thursday series. That's $5. That is November 20th, Thursday. It is interesting to me. I like this sentence where you said that for you, I was at the right age in the right kind of place that it felt beamed right to us, a kind of double antidote to both summer blockbuster slop and stuffy Oscar. But that point about being at the right age, at the right place, at the right time to see a movie is something that I think we can all, like, there are movies that hit you at exactly the right moment, right? I mean,
I was a college student at, you know, a small liberal arts school in a big city in the mid 90s. And that movie comes out, and I was sort of, you know, sort of artsier, tied to campus, part of the campus. I was running the radio station and the newspaper and the film society and all that kind of stuff. So those are sort of my people. And like that comes out, I still remember seeing it for the first time in this packed theater. I'm sitting next to my friend Tigger Lunny, and there's the scene where the kid accidentally gets shot in the face, and the edit is so surprising and so sharp that Peter literally falls out of his seat laughing at the kid getting shot in the face. And he's not laughing about like what has happened within the movie. He's laughing at the edit and the way that from a cinematic standpoint, the way it's set up and delivered, and like that kind of just reaction to like really pure movie making, I sort of remember very strongly.
You do ask the rhetorical question, is Pulp Fiction still considered Tarantino's best? What's the answer to that?
I mean, it depends on who you ask, right? I'm not sure what the consensus is. I think in some ways it's sort of fallen a little bit in consensus. It probably seems a little immature in some places relative to some of his other stuff. I just think there's it's similar. It's not as good as Citizen Kane, but it's similar to Citizen Kane and the same kind of feel of just like a guy showing off and like realizing he can show off. And that there's a real thrill to sort of a filmmaker at that level of control, really, for the first time. There's not many examples of that, like in movie history, really. And you can still really feel that pulsing through the movie. I don't know if I'd say it's my favorite. I think Jackie Brown has a deeper feeling to it. I think Once Upon a Time in Hollywood actually has a deeper feeling to it. Those would probably be my two favorites.
Thanks very much, Chris. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
You can of course, read Chris's stuff over at the Daily Memphian. He has been incredibly busy. Both he covered the Grizzlies game last night, and then he wrote the Darrell Arthur. Do you remember Darrell Arthur, Jeffrey?
Oh, yeah.
Are you a big fan of Darrell Arthur? It sure looked promising with Darrell Arthur Once Upon a Time. You know, he looked like he was going to be a star.
I mean, I certainly remember Game 4.
Certainly remember Game 4. Yeah, he was unbelievable. So he did that, and he's got the piece on the film as well. So you can check all of that out at the Daily Memphian. By the way, holiday gift idea. Give someone a subscription to the Daily Memphian. You can do that. Gift subscriptions as well. All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back to talk to Sam Hardiman from the Daily Memphian in a moment. Before then, I will tell you, if you are selling your house, Josh Heiser and the team of Keller Williams Realty, the folks to call, 901-461-8147. Josh has thebuyers.com. You'll find that he has more than 300 five-star Google reviews. And among the things he'll offer you is he'll come out and he is incredibly aggressive about marketing and will market your home and will find the right buyer as swiftly as possible. But he will also, given that this is so tricky, if you want the certainty of a cash offer so you know how much you're going to get and when you're going to sell your home so you can just move on, honestly, he will do that too. And unlike a lot of the robocalls or the folks who are from out of town who are besieging you with emails, you want to sell your house, do you want to sell your house, take this cash offer. Josh will come out and he'll give you a offer for your house for full market value. Kyle and Amanda recently had to do that. They were clients of his. They wanted a bigger house, and they again, it's hard to move if you don't know how much you're going to get for your house. It's hard to pick out the next house. And so they went that way with Josh, and they were extraordinarily happy with it. You can find the method that's best for you. But give him a call, certainly, 901-461-8147. Josh has the buyers.com. Sam Hardiman on the other side. We'll ask him about the National Guard. How long is the National Guard going to be in Memphis? Maybe Sam can tell us that and more. It's Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Come to DSW for the shoes, stay for the fun. Because, let's be honest, if shoe shopping isn't fun, are you even doing it right? So go ahead, try something new. Try something different. Good different. Try something that feels like you. You know, the real you. And then definitely brag about it later. Because at DSW, you've got unlimited freedom to play. Find the shoes that get you at prices that get your budget at DSW stores or at DSW.com. Let us surprise you.
Apúrate que se acaban las ofertas de Early Black Friday en Lowe's. Ahorra hasta 50% en electrodomésticos selectos y hasta 25% extra en combos de electrodomésticos selectos. Y como la Navidad ya se siente, ahorra $4 en luces LED de 100 bombillas en hilera GE. Ahora a solo $5.98. Lowe's, nosotros ayudamos, tú ahorras. Válido hasta 12/3, selección varía por tienda, solo en tiendas selectas, hasta agotar existencias. Detalles en Lowe's.com.
Right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show, joined now by Sam Hardiman, as we are every Wednesday. Sam covers the city for the Daily Memphian. All right, Sam, I always start with Pat's question now. Drake May MVP?
Yeah, that's actually an interesting question. We were going back and forth in one of my group chats this morning about just the value, and I'm curious Jeffrey's thoughts on this, of betting Drake May at this point for MVP. Right now, Drake May has to be the front runner just by record. Good quarterback, best record. That's what this award is right now.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think the value's
is
all
favorite?
Gone.
Is Matt Stafford not the...
When I looked on before Sunday, May was the favorite. And then, Stafford played well, but it wasn't like he put up monster numbers.
Well, there is the lifetime achievement award factor for Matt Stafford, right? Like, definitely probably has deserved one in his career and has had maybe one of the best years of his career.
I certainly think he is playing the best football I've ever seen him play.
Right. So he's plus 150 right now. Drake May is plus 175. Jeff's best friend, Josh Allen, is plus 550. And then Jonathan Taylor, plus 750, but that just seems like a sucker's bet.
Yeah, no, he's dropped off now. It'll be interesting. I do think that Bills-Pats game will matter, like in this conversation. Josh was obviously not even in the conversation until he got six touchdowns Sunday, and then it's like he's sort of reemerged. But I could see it. Kind of amazing to think year two, Drake May MVP. I mean, it's interesting. So is Vrabel coach of the year
at this point? I mean, it's either him or Steichen,
he's
right?
Be, right.
Steichen's got a good case.
Yeah. Ben Johnson,
yeah, he does.
Pretty good too. Chicago, yeah. but I think Steichen, Vrabel, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Ben Johnson, maybe that's the worst 7-3 team of all time. I mean, do they still have a negative point differential? It's pretty close.
Let me double check, because they only won by two.
Right, right. It's got to be really close to negative. It might be like negative five, negative four.
Let's see. They have a negative 6 point differential.
Unbelievable.
I was so close.
Seven and three.
It takes coaching then to pull that out. No, I don't think he's the
coaching and quarterback play,
Because I think people are skeptical of the Bears. I think you're more likely to see Steichen or Vrabel. But it's certainly an interesting season. Didn't expect this. The NFL is surprising us. All right, onward we go. It feels like since we last spoke to you, Sam, you've written a whole series of National Guard stories. I want to go through them in chronological order. First, we had the news that 100 more National Guard members were coming to Memphis. Do we know why? Like, there's been a general perception, whatever, at least my perception has been, that the task force has done significant work, whether you approve of it or disapprove of it, or not you, but whether people out there, whether they approve of some things, disapprove of others, they clearly have had an impact. I don't think it's undeniable that there has been an impact of the task force. I haven't seen much in the way of stories suggesting that the National Guard is particularly a significant part of that impact, and yet we have the news that 100 more were coming to Memphis. Do we know why?
Yeah, as of last week, someone familiar with the matter was telling me it was about 344. It may be more than that now. As to the answer question of why, Jeff, no, I don't have an answer for that. I've asked why is this necessary? I've asked the people that would answer such questions. I have not gotten an answer from those folks. And so, you know, that is, you know, right now these new National Guard troops are at MPD precincts, right? Again, they're not law enforcement per se. They are conducting foot patrols often alongside MPD, and they are sort of eyes and ears, as the buzzword is said. They are the people that are just walking around as a deterrent.
I see. All right. So, all right. Then you had a separate story, another story, which chronicled how many millions of dollars the National Guard deployment has cost. Where did we get the information about the cost of the National Guard?
Yeah, so this is going to be, I get to explain surety and junction bonds to people. That's really fun. This is what I,
hang
can we go
on
back
on
to
your hats, no, I'm just kidding. People, yeah, go ahead.
So what happened was last week, as both sides, both the state of Tennessee and the Democratic lawmakers who have sued over the National Guard's presence in Memphis, Tennessee, were waiting for Davidson County Chancellor Patricia Head Moscow to rule on the National Guard's legality in Memphis, Tennessee. The state of Tennessee made an interesting filing in which they said that if Moscow were to rule against them, she should require the plaintiffs, the Democratic lawmakers and their attorneys, yeah, suing them, to post $8 million worth of bond. And so what this bond is if a judge stops something through an injunction, he or she require a bond to be posted. So if this injunction is overturned on appeal, if it's overturned later by the same judge, that the damages to the defendant, which in this case would be the state of Tennessee, are covered. And so the state of Tennessee said, hey, you need to make them post $8 million because right now we have contracts to house the National Guard that are worth about $7 million. And we have transportation contracts that are worth about $500,000.
We have already kicked in all this money to house the National Guard. So if you tell us we can't have the National Guard, and then we ultimately turns out that we can, you all should put up the money so you make us whole for this money that we've wasted paying for transportation and hotels.
That is correct. Yes, you said it better than me.
And that's basically how much money?
Roughly what they were saying was they need to post $8 million. You count in the contracts, it gets north of $7 million in terms of what has been committed by the state of Tennessee, which the federal government is paying for. Okay, what the federal government is paying for, roughly $7.5 million bucks.
So And so, therefore, we now have a sense. Again, that doesn't include salaries or anything else, a payment to the National Guard, but it just sets a minimum bar that this National Guard deployment is costing the taxpayers at least $8 million. Is that for this?
Yeah, we're talking, and these contracts were for, you know, several weeks hence, essentially. Yeah. This wasn't like if, say, the National Guard stays through February.
No,
that would be a lot longer.
Yeah.
Right.
Now, again,
right,
as we talked about this last week, one can bemoan, if one wants to, all this tax money, all this taxpayer money being spent on the National Guard, which, to my mind, I won't let you don't have to editorialize here, seems like they're just walking around. Like, they're not making a huge difference, let's be honest. And it seems like a lot of money for guys to walk around and take selfies. That's my editorializing. In fairness, though, this is not, and so we talked about yesterday, this is not Memphis City of Memphians tax money. This is federal money that would otherwise not be coming in Memphis. So it's not like we could be using this to you know, restart Boys and Girls Clubs or do something else or support some other good project in Memphis. This is the great national taxpayer in the sky that is paying for this. Is that right?
That I've never heard us as a collective referred to as the national taxpayer in the sky, but that's correct.
It just came out.
It is not. This is not your general tax dollars. And I'll just throw this out there that maybe Memphis hotel occupancy is higher than it would be right now because of the National Guard. I'll just throw that out there.
Well, there's some argument, and this isn't something, this is a county argument, right? There is an argument that that this entire deployment is costing this community money. Right? Isn't that why the county has said that's why they have a shortfall? One reason they have a shortfall is because of the additional expenses and caused by this? Isn't that story?
They have said that. I want to press pause on that, and I have not gotten in the granularity of the county budget.
Yep.
But I can, as somebody who is well-versed in municipal finance, I'll say this. The city of Memphis is looking at a $7 million hole that they talked to the Memphis City Council about yesterday. Uh-huh. Not once was the National Guard mentioned as a reason for that $7 million hole.
I see.
So how the county gets to a $43 million hole from 1 month of the Memphis Safe Task Force being in town when we're almost, you know, a third of the way through the fiscal year is very interesting math.
Seems like
something. I'll just say that.
There. All right. So first we had the news that more were coming. Then we had the news about how much this is costing. And then we had the decision from the aforementioned judge saying that this deployment, basically enjoining this deployment, saying that Governor Bill Lee did not have the authority to deploy the National Guard to Memphis under these circumstances, or at least enjoining, may not have the authority, because this wasn't a final disposition. This was just in terms of whether she's going to enjoin the grant an injunction. But it appears that the National Guard might be pulling out of here, except for that decision was paused for appeal. Is that right?
Yeah. So, yeah, on Monday evening, you know, and this was after Patricia had Muscal had, you know, been mulling this for about two full weeks.
Yeah.
On Monday evening, and I've been checking this docket 35 to 40 times a day during business hours.
And is that what you have to do?
Monday
night,
you
have to log onto a website and just refresh?
Yeah, I've been doing it at traffic lights. I stopped, you know, recreational activities such as tennis or golf, like with pauses to, like I called them Patricia pauses. And of course, at the one time I'm not checking, although we managed to get the story out very quickly, at 7 p.m., on Monday night, she ruled.
Uh-huh.
And essentially, she did not weigh in on the constitutionality of whether the Guard is the militia or the Army, which we've talked about in the past. She said, I'm not touching that, essentially, in her 35-page order. What she did say was, there are limited circumstances under state law, and anyone listening to this, go look up TCA, Tennessee, Code Annotated, 58106-C, and look at the limited circumstances that she says the governor is able to deploy the National Guard. And those are, you know, say disasters, flooding, tornadoes, et cetera. And what she said in her ruling was essentially a crime emergency, you know, absent really rebellion here, is not an emergency to bring in the National Guard, and that the plaintiffs were likely to succeed on the merits of that argument. But what she did, to your point, Jeff, is she stayed the ruling for five business days so that the state could appeal. The state has said they could appeal.
Okay. Okay.
And so it's very likely to appeal. And so that is very likely the ruling would be stayed while we're waiting for the appeal. Right. And so essentially she's siding with the plaintiffs, but not necessarily harming the defendant.
To whom will she be appealed? To whom would they, will the state be appealing? And when would that be heard?
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't know at this point if it's going to be the Tennessee Court of Appeals or the Tennessee Supreme Court and how quickly they would take this up. I would imagine relatively quickly. We are talking about the Thanksgiving holiday coming up here, so that's going to get a little confusing in terms of business hours. But that's what we're looking at.
And then even if the appeal is unsuccessful, well, if the appeal is unsuccessful, then presumably the National Guard is going to have to pack up their stuff and leave, right? But there is this thought that there might be some legislative intervention. Is that correct?
Yeah, there's a thought. Tennessee Journal, which does great work out of Nashville, reported yesterday that some lawmakers, and these were unnamed lawmakers, were considering, you know, if we should call a special session and essentially change state law to allow the National Guard to come to Memphis. Or, you know, I think you maybe, I'm just theorizing here, you might have to make it other municipalities too. You might not just be able to single out Memphis in this one specific instance. That would also take time. You would have to call the special session. You'd have to get into the special session. You'd have to pass some bills. That takes time as well. So there's a world where the National Guard just picks up and leaves and is gone for a period of time, maybe forever.
All right. But if the National Guard gets on up out of here, that doesn't mean the task force does, right? Most of the bulk of the task force is still here doing their work.
Absolutely. The 1,500-plus federal agents, federal law enforcement that are here and doing most of the law enforcing that the task force is doing, they're still going to be here. They're not stopped by the National Guard deployment. There's a very big difference between authority over military power being used for municipal law enforcement or just law enforcement in general, and federal law enforcement being present in Memphis, Tennessee.
All right. And then finally, Sam, you've had a busy week. There was news yesterday that the city has decided everyone, all municipal employees, will make $40,000 or more. Is that right?
That's correct. And we're not talking about illegal guns, which is fine.
That too. We don't have time to get to everything, Sam. You've been so busy. I forgot them all. I didn't have the complete list. What is an illegal gun? We'll get to that next week. $40,000. Yeah.
Yeah, that's correct. And there's not really a breakdown necessarily of how many people are getting, say, a bump from $34,000 to $40,000. But most of the cost of the tax, this is all going to cost taxpayers $800,000 total. This move. So we're talking about an $800+ million budget here. So that's not even a percentage, not even a real percentage here. So, but most of the actual cost is in the library department. The librarians at your City of Memphis public libraries, which I'm looking at Jeffrey Red Library right now, a lot of them make less than $40,000 a year. They are now going to get bumped up considerably. That's about half of the $800,000 cost. There are some police dispatchers and other folks that are going to get bumped up here. Some Memphis Parks employees that are also going to get bumped up here.
All right. Folks, you can go read Sam's work at the Daily Memphian, including his story on the Memphis Safe Task Force seizing more than 400 illegal guns, where he discusses what is an illegal gun in Tennessee. We may pick that up again next week. Sam, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Jeff. Go Pats.
Sam Hardiman, go Bills. We'll take a break. Back in a moment. Jeff Calkin Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
At Designer Shoe Warehouse, we believe that shoes are an important part of, well,
everything. From first steps to first dates, from all-nighters to all-time personal bests.
From building pillow forts to building
a life. For all the big and small moments that make up your whole world, DSW is there. And we've got just the shoes. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love at brag-worthy prices at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Apúrate que se acaban las ofertas de Early Black Friday en Lowe's. Ahorra hasta 50% en electrodomésticos selectos y hasta 25% extra en combos de electrodomésticos selectos. Y como la Navidad ya se siente, ahorra $4 en luces LED de 100 bombillas en hilera GE. Ahora a solo $5.98. Lowe's, nosotros ayudamos. Tú ahorras. Válido hasta 12-3. Selección varía por tienda. Solo en tiendas selectas hasta agotar existencias. Detalles en Lowe's.com.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins show. I was looking, Jeffrey, we haven't talked a lot about it in the NFL. Who's on the hot seat? I was looking at the NFL, looking at the story. Something struck me here about who's on the hot seat, coaches, and who are the hot coaches who are going to replace him.
Okay. All right, so coaches on the hot seat. Are we still saying McDaniel?
But maybe not.
They do have a soft schedule. And
he's on the hot seat, but maybe not.
Stephen Ross did drop the old... Tua will be my quarterback. McDaniel will be my coach.
I mean, here's the thing. Raheem Morris is an obvious, right? That team is wildly underachieved. But Arthur Blank loves him, and it's only year two, right?
And so, now his quarterback got hurt. But
yeah, they have that. So then you have, like, Stefanski. Stefanski, like he...
I would think Stefanski's on the hot seat. I would think... what's our boy? Is it Gannon?
Jonathan Gannon.
Gannon is Arizona. I think
Jonathan Gannon is another one who could be.
I think the Vikings should fire Kevin O'Connell.
They're not going to.
I think they should.
There's no chance.
I think they should.
Aaron Glenn or Pete Carroll?
For the record, I just think that's so the Giants could hire him.
Oh, Aaron Glenn and Pete Carroll?
I don't think.
Neither one. They're just
I would
one
be surprised.
Year. So it's really not like, I don't think anyone's automatic. We've already been there, right? But anyway, but here's the other thing. You also don't have any slam dunks. Like last year, you had Vrabel and Ben Johnson. Very different resumes, right? But they were like hot as hot could be.
Yes.
Like you'd be thrilled.
Yes.
If your team hired Ben Johnson or Mike Vrabel, and my God, look at that. Look what they're doing. Look what they're both doing. Now, it's not at all obvious who you would.
Well, I'm going through it.
Joe Brady. Well, kind of blooms off that rose just a little bit, right? Arthur Smith. Yeah, you already had a chance. I mean, I think he's a smart guy.
I talked myself into Arthur because I think Arthur's critical flaw was he picked Desmond Ridder, and we don't know how much of ownership was involved. But I talked myself into Arthur.
I think he's smart. But Matt Nagy. You're interested in Matt Nagy?
No.
Kingsbury again?
I think Cliff should do what McDaniels is doing. I think Cliff is a great offensive coordinator. Like, I just don't want him as a head coach.
It's just interesting that there's not... I mean, I do wonder whether Kafka's going to keep the job with the Giants.
I mean, there's a real push that is a possibility. I mean, I also think that this is true. I wonder if the fact that, as you're pointing out, there's not these obvious candidates, is that making people...
Is one the one reason that there's no obvious people on the hot seat anymore?
Right,
is because there's also no obvious people to replace them.
Right, because we've also wound up. It's always been hot coordinator, and now all those coordinators have head jobs, and they're now just play callers.
So people come at me and listen. If they fired McDermott, I would not be outraged. Right, like whatever. But which of those guys are you saying? Oh, definitely better. You know, I don't know.
I told you, if you look up the numbers, since McDermott has gotten there, the only coach that has had more wins, playoff wins in the AFC, is Andy Reid.
Jesse Minter has done a good job as the Chargers DC. Like, he's been hot.
I mean, he comes from the McDonald. Like, he's got the McDonald formula.
He's got that resume.
So I asked a Rams fan what they thought about Shula, and they said, listen, he's done a good job, but it's really easy to coordinate defense when you don't have to blitz. Because their front's so good right now.
Right. So you just send for it. That's interesting. Penix, by the way, is torn ACL.
Yeah.
He's done for the year. Still don't know if Aaron Rodgers is going to play.
Seems like no surgery. Probably out this week. Seems to be
That's
the vibe.
What it seems like. All right. What's coming up next on 92.9?
Here's what's coming up next on Jason and John. Coach Hurd will join their program. He'll be with me as well on Jeffrey Wright and Company. Jason Munn's going to join the program at 2:35. Cobb will be with Gabe at 5 o'clock.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We got to get out of here. Back tomorrow. We'll do trivia. But for now, our work is done.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Apúrate que se acaban las ofertas de Early Black Friday en Lowe's. Ahorra hasta 50% en electrodomésticos selectos y hasta 25% extra en combos de electrodomésticos selectos. Y como la Navidad ya se siente, ahorra $4 en luces LED de 100 bombillas en hilera GE. Ahora solo $5.98. Lowe's, nosotros ayudamos, tú ahorras.
Válido hasta 12/3, selección varía por tienda, solo en tiendas selectas, hasta agotar existencias. Detalles en Lowe's.com.